तपाईँ एसपिएस नेपालीको साथमा हुनुहुन्छ। अरू रोचक सामग्रीहरूका लागि sbs.com.au/nepali जानुहोस्।
आफ्नो समुदाय र देशको लागि निस्वार्थ भावनाका साथ काम गर्ने सयौँ अस्ट्रेलियनहरूलाई यो वर्षको अस्ट्रेलियाको दिवस पारेर विभिन्न पदवी तथा उपाधिका साथ सम्मानित गरिएको छ। गभर्नर जेनरल डेभिड हार्लीले जारी गरेको विज्ञप्तिका अनुसार यसरी सम्मानित हुनेहरूमा 1,099 व्यक्तित्वहरू रहेका छन्। यसमध्ये 837 जेनरल डिभिजन अन्तर्गतको अर्डर अफ अस्ट्रेलिया पाएका छन् भने 26 सैन्य क्रियाकलापका लागि र बाँकी 236 चाहिँ राम्रो कामका आधारमा यी उपाधिले सम्मानित गरिएको छ। यसरी उपाधि पाउनेहरूमध्येका 2 चाहिँ नेपालसँग सम्बन्ध रहेको छ। यो वर्ष प्राध्यापक अक्रम ताजी मेम्बर अफ दि अर्डर अफ अस्ट्रेलियाले सम्मानित भएकी छिन्। इरानको तेहरान विश्वविद्यालय, अस्ट्रेलियामा सिडनी र फ्लिन्डर विश्वविद्यालय अनि अमेरिकाको हार्वर्डबाट शिक्षा पाएकी प्रोफेसर एमिरेट्स अक्रम ताजी अहिले अस्ट्रेलिया र नेपाल लगायत विश्वका विभिन्न विश्वविद्यालयहरूमा भिजिटिङ प्रोफेसरको रूपमा अध्यापन गराउँछिन्। प्राध्यापिका ताजीसँग सहकर्मी आवास पराजुलीले कुराकानी गर्नुभएको थियो। सुनौ उक्त कुराकानी।
Professor Akram, welcome to SBS. Tell us about when did you first heard about the award and how did you heard about the award? What were you doing?
Actually I was traveling to Adelaide on 12th of December. I had just returned from Nepal and I was going to Adelaide. I received an email that morning. And I was very excited. So and they said, oh, you have to keep this very confidential. So I didn't tell anyone, except I was sitting on the plane next to my daughter. And I just mentioned to my daughter. And my daughter gave me a high five and said, great, mom, you know.
When did you first found out about Nepal? How did you know about the country, first of all?
Yeah. In 2014, I was a keynote speaker at a conference in Melbourne. And I met this wonderful young academic, very energetic, with name BJ Pant. And she's now a professor, Professor BJ Pant. And after my talk, she came to me and she said, oh, you know, I really liked your talk. And may I have a copy of your talk? And my talk was on a CD, and I just gave her the CD. I said, yep, you can have this talk. She said she can use it as a resource for her teaching. And anyway, I didn't hear from her until a couple of years ago. She contacted me and she said, you know, she wants to run workshops and bring international visitors to her country. And she asked me if I was willing to go and present some talks. And I said, yeah, absolutely. So, and as it worked out, I was going to teach in Thailand and return back to Australia. So what I did, I extended my travel from Thailand. I went to Kathmandu, and then I stayed in Kathmandu for 10 days. And we had a very busy week, but it was a wonderful week, you know. And lots of academics, lots of research students attended my talk. And the Tribhuvan University, as you know, during the 2015 earthquake, many parts of Kathmandu and Nepal was badly damaged. And of course, many of the buildings of the universities, they were still in a kind of a state of disarray. So they had this temporary building where it wasn't a very large room, but everything was kind of a temporary building. But the room was just filled with academics from all over the university and, in fact, some other campuses, and they came and attended all my talks. So we had kind of 4 days of talks in the university, and then we took a trip to field trip because Professor BJ Pant is a plant physiologist like me, and she does a lot of work with native orchids and medicinal plants of orchids. So we visited to some of the experimental sites, to some of the villages where she propagates some of the rare orchids and return them back to the villages to plant them. Because I think one of the problems with Nepal is that they harvest, wild harvest, many of these plants, and they send them to China and other countries, And as a result, some of the native plants are at the brink of extinction. So Professor Pond's project is to literally bring many of these rare plants from the brink of extinction back and allow them to be multiplied in the under tissue culture and under biotechnological techniques, and then return to the wild. So that is, of course, I've known about Nepal for quite some time because of the wonderful walks, and of course, Mount Everest this year or last year was a lot in the news of the so many people who were trying to climb it, and all these pictures that was astonishing to see that there were queues of people trying to reach the summit. That is, of course, it's a very famous place, but I didn't know about the university until 2014 when I met this professor. And again, this year in September, I'm going back because they're organizing a conference and they would like me to go back and present in their conference.
What is the difference between...
The science behind the teaching of a subject is much the same, whether you are teaching horticulture or whether you're teaching biology. My field is, I teach biology, I teach plant physiology, and of course horticulture science, plant biotechnology, etc. Teaching is teaching. The difference is that in a place like Australia, we are using the most advanced technology that is supporting our teaching and learning. Whereas in a country like Nepal, they still rely on very old ways of teaching. They don't have the advanced technology, largely because, I guess, electricity is not, is not as reliable. Partly because they don't have the facilities and the equipment that we have in here. Here, as you know, a lot of the teaching is done through online teaching, that the students download everything from the website, they prepare for the class before they come to the class. And many of our classes, in the past, we used to have lectures, but these days we call them collaborative learning spaces, and the students come and they become collaborators of us as university academics. So they, those kind of new ways of teaching still hasn't permeated into many developing countries, and Nepal is one of them. I have traveled to 88 countries.
So let's talk about your history. When did you first came to Australia, and how did you come to Australia?
Yeah, I came to Australia in March 1971. That was during Shah's time. I was a university medal winner. I was the top of the class. And as a result, I was given a Shah's government scholarship to go abroad and study abroad. I had admission to go to University of California in Davis and University of Guelph in Canada. However, that year, the Iranian government decided they will send the agriculture, because I'm an agriculture science graduate, for their subsequent postgraduate studies to Australia, because they reasoned that the Australian climatic conditions is more similar to Iran, because it's hot, it's dry, you know, sort of a drought is a major issue, etc. And that is how they came to Australia. And I arrived here on 31st of March, 1971. So next year I will celebrate 50 years of my arrival in Australia.
Let's go back to Nepal. How did you find the people in Nepal? Like, what was your first impression when you landed in Nepal and went to give this lecture in Nepal? Tell us about your experience in Nepal as well, with the people, with the students over there, how they received you, what you were teaching them. What was the general atmosphere in Nepal?
I found Nepalese just such warm and beautiful and hospitable people. I felt the students are hungry to learn, hungry to do better. I found my academic colleagues exceedingly generous and accommodating. You know, they put me up in a beautiful accommodation. They met me every morning to take me to the university. they supported me, they looked after me. So I have got the fondest memory of my stay in Nepal. But I also recognize that Nepal has a very long way to go to become, more advanced in many ways. I think that the earthquake of 2015 has smashed a lot of things around, and that needs, they're still fixing. But like many developing countries that I have traveled to, unfortunately, there is also some corruption, in some of these countries. As I said, I haven't seen it myself. My colleagues in university, they are just as good as anyone. You can find them anywhere in the world. Most of them educated overseas, either in Japan or South Korea or Germany. In fact, while I was there, I met this young academic full professor, which is very tough to become one, especially in Nepal. I know how their system is tough in promotion. And he said he finished his PhD in South Korea. He worked there for a while. And then he had Humboldt Fellowship. Humboldt Fellowship in Germany is given the best to the best of the best. So he came across as someone, a great thinker, an amazing scientist. And he said he lived outside Nepal for 14 or 15 years. But then he thought, Nepal is home. He wants his children to grow up to feel they belong to Nepal. So he came back because he's got school-age children, and he said, I want them to understand the culture and learn about the very rich culture. We went to the village, in Chitlan, beautiful village, beautiful ceremony when you arrive, when you leave, and the people in the village, everywhere we went, just amazing. Those kind of things, you don't see it in the West. You can only see them in places where the history and the culture is very rich. And I think Nepal is one of them. So most of the time I was in Kathmandu because I had commitments in Kathmandu. I was teaching in Tribhuvan University. Then I was invited to the Nepal Academy of Science and Technology to present a talk there. Then I was invited to go to one of the hospitals.
We touched about the topic of native plants in Nepal being in the brink of extinction. Could you elaborate that on a bit further on?
Largely, I am talking about the orchids. Many of these rare orchids are being harvested in the wild. And then they are being, because many of them have got medicinal value, they dry them and then they sell them, especially in India or in China, because as you know, Chinese are very keen about having medicinal plants for all sorts of ailments. Many of these orchids, because of these wild people, they just go in the wild, harvest them. There doesn't seem to be any rules or regulations around harvesting any wild plant. Here in Australia, you can't just go to the wild and harvest anything willy-nilly, whereas in Nepal, people just go, and the villagers, they dig everything out and then they just send them to China.
तपाईं SBS रेडियो नेपालीको साथमा हुनुहुन्छ।
SBS रेडियो
प्राध्यापिका अक्रम ताजी, जसलाई चाहिँ मेम्बर अफ दि अर्डर अफ अस्ट्रेलियाले सम्मानित गरिएको छ, उहाँको नेपालसँग रहेको सम्बन्धको बारेमा सहकर्मी आवास पराजुलीसँगको कुराकानी र अब लागौँ यसै गरी इयान ग्रिन पनि मेम्बर अफ दि अर्डर अफ अस्ट्रेलियाले सम्मानित भएका छन्। उनले भिक्टोरिया राज्यको बेन्डीको क्षेत्रमा पीस पार्क स्थापना गर्नमा निकै ठुलो योगदान दिएका थिए। उनले यसका लागि विभिन्न धर्ममा आस्था राख्ने मानिसहरूसँग सहकार्यको भावनालाई प्रोत्साहन दिनुपर्छ भन्दै एक अर्काप्रतिको सहयोगी भावनाको महत्त्वको प्रचार गर्दै आएका छन्। उनी आजभन्दा 40 वर्ष अघि पहिलोचोटि नेपाल गएका थिए र त्यहाँ एक नेपाली गुरुसँग दीक्षा लिएर आएपछि यस कार्यमा लाग्न झनै प्रभावित भएको बताउँछन्।
I've been involved with Buddhism for well over 40 years, and in fact, my original encounter with Buddhism was in India at Sarnath. Shortly after that, I visited Nepal and then discovered Tibetan Buddhism, and particularly my main teacher, who is Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who himself is a Nepali, and he operates out of Kopan Monastery, just out of Kathmandu, his main base, although he travels all around the world as well. So that really, my links with, personal links with Nepal go right back to my earliest days, when I met Buddhism over 40 years ago.
So you went to Nepal for that teaching, I believe, back in 1979, is that correct?
That's right, yes. So I was in, I attended a month-long retreat and Buddhist teaching at Kopan Monastery in 1979. And that by that stage, I was really getting, it was a big development in my understanding and learning about Buddhism. And shortly after that, Lama Yeshe actually came to Bendigo, and he arrived. My family offered some land in Bendigo in Victoria. Lama Yeshe accepted that in 1980. Then in 1981, he came here, and my wife and I and one other chap were actually set up the very first Tibetan Buddhist center in regional Victoria.
If I can also ask, since you said that you went to Nepal, Kathmandu, back in 1979, but since then, do you have any links to the country there, other people?
Oh, yes, we have a lot of links and connection to the country. Well, I've been back twice since then as well, including the time that we went to Tibet. Kathmandu was our staging point to get into Tibet and out of Tibet. That was in 1995. But also we have regular connections with Nepal, because a lot of the holy objects that we are buying and purchasing from for our great stupa are all handmade in Nepal. So, for example, all our prayer wheels. And just in the last week, we received the final piece of the great stupa, which is a 5-meter surtok, which is the piece that goes right on the very top of the stupa. That had been completed in, so there's a factory just out of Kathmandu, which has been making all this material. So there's an ongoing connection with Kathmandu and with Nepal, which has been constant over the last 40 years. And actually, I might also add that we have a Nepalese family are building a temple, a Hindu temple at the Great Stupa as well. So one of the aspects of the Great Stupa is we have what is known as a peace park. And in the peace park, we are sort of representing and showcasing the all the different faiths. So, for example, we have a statue of St. Francis, which was given to us and sponsored by the local Catholic diocese. We have an Ik Onkar, which came from the Sikh community of Victoria. We have installation from the Islamic Council of Victoria, which is being built, and one from Baha'i community as well. But the relevance to Nepal is that this Nepalese family are building a traditional Nepalese-style temple.
I know you have been promoting, as you just mentioned, with the Great Stupa, you have been promoting interfaith, especially in regional Victoria, Bendigo region, and surrounding areas. Why do you see the importance of this interfaith at the moment?
Well, I think it's always important, but I think at the moment it's probably more important than ever, because in many ways you're seeing throughout the whole world this rise of bigotry and movements against outsiders coming into all societies in Europe, in America, in Australia, and I think this goes against everything that Buddhism stands for. I think it goes against everything that all faiths stand for. So I think it's important that people of faith stand up and be counted, that we are here for harmony amongst all the faiths. And even beyond that, even if you don't have faith, then I think it's incredibly important that you're welcoming of everyone, whatever their beliefs, whatever their culture, they should all be welcome, particularly in a country like Australia, which is really has a history of being welcoming to people of many different cultures and faiths. And I think that that history is a little bit under threat at the moment. So I think it's very important that we Australians should all stand up for what we've achieved and make sure that we don't lose any ground in our treatment of our new Australians and in our treatment of people who are coming, you know, knocking on our door seeking refugee status or whatever it is. We should be welcoming and considerate of their needs and so forth. So I think this is something I hope that I'm sure that the Great Stupa will be an example to the rest of Australia and to the world of the way we can all live in harmony and in a compassionate support for each other.
लाइक, शेयर र कमेन्ट गर्नुहोस्. एसपिएस नेपालीलाई फेसबुकमा साथ दिनुहोस्.